Sunday night in the shack. I'm facing Matthew Boyle, ready to get down to some serious gaming discussion. How are you feeling, Matthew?
Still scared from the PT room demo.
Tom and Matt attack.
Hello, Thomas. Oh, hey, we
did. I did that.
Yeah, you did.
I've never done that. I've never said Tom Matt Attack, have I?
I don't think so. Maybe once.
That's the first.
Maybe once in like 60 odd episodes. Yeah.
And that's right. Yeah, I think, yeah, we're over 60 now, aren't we? Are we?
67, I believe.
No way.
Yeah, we're pretty high, I think.
We missed a trick when we were 64.
Yeah, I'm waiting for 69.
69. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you been, Matt? All right?
I'm all right. Yeah, been doing quite a bit of gaming today, so it's been quite nice.
You mentioned the PT demo there.
Oh, God, that put the shits up me. For those of you who don't know, announced last week during Gamescom, which is something we should have probably researched a bit more. I did watch Gamescom, but I've kind of forgotten a lot about. Sony, during their press conference, announced that they were bringing a new survival horror game to their system, and that it was called the PT, and it was on the PlayStation 4 right now. And so, lo and behold, a lot of people downloaded it. And essentially what it is you walking through a very long corridor of a house and repeating it. It's in a constant loop, but every time you walk through, something else happens. And it generally will scare the living shit out of you. Like, I haven't been that scared since being a teenager and playing Resident Evil Remake on the Wii. Mm-hmm. Wii? GameCube. But, yeah, it's very terrifying. It turns out that it's a trailer for a upcoming game called Silent Hills. Notice the plural, the S after hill.
Wonder what that implies.
By Guillermo del Toro. Famous director of Pan's Labyrinth, Kronos, and
Devil's Backbone.
More specifically and recently, Pacific Rim.
Yeah, Hellboy.
Hellboy also. And Hiro Kojima, the mastermind behind Boktai and the Metal Gear Solid franchise.
So two wacky guys.
Making a very serious and shit scary survival horror.
Yeah, I think they've been quoted as saying they're going to try and make this the scariest game ever made. Or something along those lines. Not those words exactly.
They're on route for it from what I've seen. Mm. Yeah, so that was quite scary. I don't recommend it if you have a weak heart.
Well, I first noticed about it was the incredible visuals.
Yes, it looks amazing.
Really, I've not seen anything on this generation that impressed me so much.
It's almost as if it was made for this generation and not for the Xbox 360 and PS3.
And this is it, really.
Funny that.
It? You know, if you do develop it specifically for the newest system, then they tend to look a lot better, the games do.
They do.
Not that you can really criticise a lot of the multi-format releases. They still look good. But I think we've yet to see, you know, the true potential of these next-generation consoles.
Well, I mean, like,
at least this gave us a glimpse of that.
I think how good this looks. And this is technically,
it looks
like
photorealistic.
Yeah, but it's one of the first games, like, developed for this generation. Yeah. Think about it that way. Like, this is the first glimpse of what is possible with this console. Mm-hmm. And that's a very exciting prospect. But, yeah, don't really give a shit about AAA games, but this is one that's exciting me, the prospect of it. I like a good survival horror.
They're not going to compromise the horror I've heard in this game, so it should really go for the jugular, so to speak. Very excited, actually. I'm interested to see you play it once it eventually comes out.
Oh, Jesus.
As I still don't own a next generation console. And I'm sure it'd be very entertaining watching you play
God,
this particular game.
I'm sure it would. I yelled out, fucking hell! Really loud and scared like earlier at one moment in that demo. Because something makes you jump. There's a lot of things that make you jump, but one thing in particular properly put the poo-poos up me. Yeah, what have you been playing, Tom?
What have I been playing? Well,
I hear you've been playing a pseudo-survival horror on the Famicom.
What would that be?
That top one right there.
Matt speaking of Kid Dracula for the Famicom. Yes, I may mention it the other week that I ordered some Famicom games from GenkiVideoGames.com, a store that I frequent often and do recommend it. So, yes, Dracula, Kid Dracula. For those not familiar, it's a Konami game.
Yes, it's a spin-off of the very popular Castlevania series.
It's like a Castlevania parody, but it's quite far removed.
It's in the same vein as Parodius. They were made around the same time. They thought they would parody Castlevania in the same way they had success parodying Gradius and all of these other games.
It's a rather fine platform game that never saw a release outside of Japan, am I correct?
You are correct in that, which is a shame. The Game Boy game is technically a remake slash sequel to that one. And is equally as enjoyable. I have a copy. It's good.
I thoroughly recommend it. If you do own a Famicom or similar system that lets you play Famicom games...
Or you have a Honeybee.
Yeah, this is certainly a game you should get. I had a few others as well. It's hard, though. Can I just point out here?
Oh, yeah, the Game Boy one's ridiculously hard. Has that one at least got a password system like the Game Boy one?
I was on... Got on to second level and I didn't get a password.
Oh, maybe it's ours and then. That's a shame.
Interesting to note about Famicom cartridges, though. These Konami ones are slightly different. They've got a hole in them.
All of them are slightly different. Every developer has their own design of cartridge.
Did you not notice?
Yeah, all of them have got their own cartridge design.
Although some of them do retain the same format.
There is a generic one as well. But for the most part... Konami, I think, Capcom, I think Namco as well.
Bandai.
Bandai, for example, as you can see.
Even IREM.
Yeah, well, IREM were quite a prevalent developer for the Famicom. They got a lot of games for the Game Boy as well that were only released in Japan.
And we talked a little bit last week about how nice Famicom cartridges look. And I've got eight games here, and nearly all different colours. There's a few majority black. But
which is odd for a Famicom.
Yeah, I've got green, I've got white, I've got off-white kind of glow-in-the-dark, and a lovely turquoise here.
Yes, it does look very good.
So the games I picked up, in case you're curious, I will name the ones that aren't that I know the names of.
Yeah.
Which is very few. First of all, we have Sentai Jetman. This is Power Rangers game.
Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting one. I've played quite a bit of this. It's rather good, first of all, but it's rather... the gameplay's not very varied.
You said this, right? Like, despite sprite swaps and stuff, the level is pretty much the same for all of the levels in the game.
Well, but the gameplay remains the same for every level, and they don't change anything up level to level. You can choose from one of the five Power Rangers that start the level. They're different in respects to what weapons they have.
Okay.
The Red Ranger's got a sword. Actually, the Black Ranger's also got a sword. I think the White and Blue Rangers have lasers.
Yeah.
Laser guns. And the Yellow Ranger has a unique weapon called the Gauntlet.
Okay.
Which is quite similar to the laser gun, actually. So, depending on your preference, you can choose what ranger
you
want.
Well, I guess they've obviously put in kind of Ryuken style, so you can have one and two players playing the same one. I assume it supports two player.
I don't know.
I know we haven't got a second Famicom controller.
I don't think it does. I didn't see the option.
Really? No. That's interesting.
But interestingly, if your ranger dies on a level, you have to select another ranger. You can't come back as that same ranger. So basically, you've got these five chances at the level, which you won't need, at least playing on the easiest level.
Yeah.
I mean, the only real difference between the characters is you've either got projectiles or you've got a close attack with the sword. You can kick as well. Each character can up and attack his kick. And just mow down the enemies, which aren't a huge variety of. In fact, there's six levels in total. You unlock the sixth level by completing the first five.
Yeah.
The first three levels are kind of similar in terms of enemies. I don't think there's... Yeah, they all share the same enemies. There's like three or four different enemies. And in the last three levels, you get a few more variation enemies. You get another three or four different types of enemies. Not all incredibly different from each other, but at least they throw some variety.
Enough
in.
Variants in them.
And at the end of every level, you fight a boss character. So you get to the end of the level and you go into your Megazord thing, yeah, and you fight a big bad guy.
Cool.
First it's a mirror man, and then it's they're all made out of a cameraman. I mean a man made out of a camera.
Yeah, okay. Not a man holding a camera filming you. That'd be awkward.
And these are kind of like boxing matches.
Yeah.
So you've got one attack button and a block button, and just kind of push into the other guy and hit him as much as you can, and then block. And you've got both got energy meters, first one to deplete the other.
Yeah, yeah, wins.
As usual. But what's great about this game is it's got good visuals, it's got good music, not a lot of variety in the music, but it's still good. It doesn't bother you too much. But it's controls very well. I think that's the high point of the game. It feels very nice to play.
Okay.
The characters, the movement, and animation, it all flows together very nicely. And above all, it's fun. And so anyone, again, just like Kid Dracula, if you've got a Famicom or similar system, try that one out. That's Sentai Jetman.
Okay. Cool.
I haven't had much of a go on any of the others. I'll just quickly run down what I've got. I've got King Kong 2, which excited me just because of its title. And they're kind of nice cover.
Yeah.
It's illustrated King Kong.
Is it like King Kong's Revenge? Is it after he gets shot down and you think he's dead, he comes back to life and starts beating shit up?
I don't know if that's the exact story, but that's what it certainly seems like.
Oh, cool.
It's top down.
Yeah.
It's like a beat-em-up, really. You move from a top-down perspective.
Yeah.
And fight enemies, tanks, people, beat-em-up, progress to the next screen. Kind of like Zelda without any kind of puzzly elements.
Oh, okay.
Not yet, anyway. I only had a quick go on that. Then you've got Hector 87, which is a top-down shooter from Hudson.
Yeah.
Good developer. And that seems fun. Had a quick go on that. One game, which I knew before buying it, was dubious in quality.
And I really want to play.
Was Transformers Mystery of Convoy.
Yeah!
The problem, and now I thought you played as Optimus Prime, but
nope,
apparently
you play as
Ultra
Magnus. Yeah.
Which Austin pointed out to me. I didn't have a clue. He could be
it could
Ultra
be anything
Prime
on the sprite, yeah, but it's Ultra Magnus.
And this game is really hard. It's a side-scroller. You can shoot your enemies, fly at you, like planes, Decepticons, I presume, fly at you at high speeds. You don't get a lot of opportunity to
it's
shoot
It's one
them.
Hit kill as well, right?
And it's one hit kill. It doesn't make for much of a fun game. I'd heard mixed things about it, though. I'd heard some people, the majority actually, that it was terrible. There's one reviewer online who spoke quite highly of it. And because it was cheap, I decided to take a gamble.
Yeah, it's cheap.
I'll try it again.
Unfortunately, because it's so terrible. Which is a shame. They've actually misspelled convoy as well. It says convoy.
It says convoy. I don't know if that's intentional.
Well, convoy, as in convoy, is the name of Optimus Prime in Japan.
Mm.
And yeah, they've...
Ah, it's a mystery of Optimus Prime then.
Yeah, pretty much. But
they're trying to rescue him, perhaps.
I assume so. I don't think you do, though. From what I understand, it's really weird. Like, the end boss is Trypticon, for some reason, the big Decepticon city, and you fight a lot of Decepticon logos as the bosses.
Right.
It's supposed to be quite lazy, but it's supposed to be fun. Like, I saw the Angry Video Game Nerd play it, and it looked entertaining, at least.
Okay, maybe give that another go. And I've got three other cartridges here, which are all in Japanese. There's no English titles on any of these three. One on the white cartridge, shall we say, is a platform game. Sci-fi platform game. Fight enemies, jump on platforms, talk to people. You can go into like little caves and people talk to you. I don't know what on earth they're saying, but
again, by Hudson.
Yeah, it seemed good, but again, I haven't had a chance to play that. It didn't grab me as much as the Power Rangers game did, of course, Dracula or even King Kong. And the other one, I did have quite a good go on, but I found it very simplistic. This is the Green Bandai cartridge. Again, this is a platformer. So I can't give you names. But this was very simplistic, and there wasn't much to it.
Yeah.
And I grew tired of it pretty quickly.
Okay.
The IREM game on the glow-in-the-dark cartridge says IF7 on the top.
Yeah, that's that just help. The code. I can't for the life of me remember the name of this series. There's a few of them on the Famicom, yeah. And there's also one or two of them on the Game Boy.
You play a little Goku-type character, shall we say. And it's a really nice game to look at, actually. It's got a very bold visual style, very cute, very big sprites. Simplistic platformer. Didn't seem to be a heck of a lot of strategy to it or anything, but it looks nice and simple and fun. And it's based on characters from 86, 87. So I think it's maybe based around an anime series or something.
I would assume so.
Like the Green Bandai one is as well.
What's quite interesting is on the back of this IREM cartridge, it's got a screenshot of the game, so you know what game it is, as well as a breakdown of the controls.
Yeah.
And I slot for your name, which is kind of cool.
No way.
Yeah, did you not see that?
You put my name on there. It says name.
Don't put your name on there.
Well, someone's put their name on the Sentai Jetman cartridge.
Yeah. Ha ha.
But I'm enjoying Famicom very much and getting to play titles which weren't released over here or even in America.
And taking advantage of Genki, I also purchased some Game Boy games.
Yes.
Along with Tom's Famicom order, I got X, which is a...
Not the new game coming out for Wii U?
No, not the new game coming out for Wii U. It has nothing to do with Xenos of any kind. It is a game actually by Argonaut, who are the folks who released some games on the Spectrum. Shooty games that I can't remember the name of, something called Sky. Oh, god damn, I wish I could remember the name. But essentially, these are the folks that would later go on to develop the Super FX chips for the Super Nintendo and create Star Fox. It is essentially the first, and arguably, in my opinion, other than Faceball 2000, only 3D game on the Game Boy, and it's from a first person view, and you're flying a spaceship and shooting things in a very isometric kind of, how do you describe it? It's very wireframe, I would guess.
Wireframe vectors. Yeah.
It's wireframed vectors, but they're not solid shapes. It's just literally the frames.
And is it enjoyable? Have you had much of a go on it yet?
Yeah, I've completed the first couple of levels on it. Like, it's only 10 levels. It's not a very long game. Unfortunately, a lot of the dialogue is in Japanese, so I've had to go on strategywiki.com and look up what I'm supposed to be doing on each level.
Oh, really? It's important. It's not that straightforward.
It's very weird because obviously it was developed by British developers who had created a demo of their ZX Spectrum game. The name eludes me. People at home who were into their Spectrums are shouting at me. And they'd done this port of it, and then Nintendo were like, wow, we love that, because it was, in their opinion, back in 1990, the only people who'd attempted and even proven possible that 3D could be done on the Game Boy, whereas Nintendo themselves even viewed it as a 2D system. Mm-hmm. And so they were very eager to get Argonaut on board to help them out and to make a game. And yeah, a guy who I can't remember his name either, Dylan something, went to work with Gunpei Yokoi.
The creator of the Game Boy.
Yes, the creator of the Game Boy, head of R&D 1, also
many
Game
other
& Watch,
things.
Many other things, including the Metroid series. And he went to Japan and he worked under him and created this game called X. And the weird thing is, like, apparently it was never released in the West because Nintendo of America were like, hey, this is a puzzle system in 1992, and so they didn't want it. And even though it was fully ready to go, and I guess out there somewhere a prototype must exist, yeah, they said, no, you're all right. And so they never released it in the West, even though it's got a lot of its, like, if you press the map is in English and the credits are in English, and it's just the in-game text.
It was too far
isn't
out to be released in Europe.
It was. Well, not even Europe, it was mostly the States that said no, and then I guess as a result of that, it just didn't get localised, no one bothered translating it, which is a shame because it's a good game.
Yeah.
And then I also picked up two other games after me getting X and seeing how pretty the Japanese Game Boy boxes were. Pretty much at the same scale as the European and American Game Boy boxes, except they're missing the bit that says Game Boy, so they're more rectangular rather than a square, and they look a lot nicer in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, this goes across all Nintendo's boxes for their systems.
Yeah.
Super Famicom, Super Nintendo, are also full the same.
Yeah.
I don't know about the NES. I don't know. I've never seen a Japanese NES box. I don't have any.
Japanese Famicom boxes are rectangular, but in a landscape view, they're long and flat.
Ah, okay.
But not much longer than a cart.
I don't know if they had I'm assuming they did have like a generic box, but actually remembering now, I have the Splatterhouse game.
No, they didn't have generic boxes. They had artwork. Japanese Famicom boxes look very, very nice.
Yeah, this particular one, though, I mean, in terms of shape.
Yeah.
I got a plastic case for Splatterhouse game. Yes, they do inside,
game. Yeah. What?
It's plastic. It's like a Mega Drive box.
Really? That's interesting.
So I guess that it, you know, having different shaped cartridges went across to also having different shaped boxes for
perhaps,
some releases.
Yeah. I'm only familiar with the Rockman boxes, the Japanese Mega Man boxes, because I was interested in picking those up when I was in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And they came in rectangular cardboard packaging.
Yeah.
So interesting.
I wouldn't
to
mind
that.
Getting a few boxed Famicom games, just maybe a couple, just to have a box or two from the Famicom. I've got a few Super Famicom boxes, so.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Japanese just nailed it with that.
They did.
And why we have to change it, I don't know. I think it's to make them bigger, perhaps, and more desirable. It's like those PC big boxes, isn't it?
You know?
Let's make the box as big as possible so people think they're getting more.
Yeah.
Basically. Especially when your cartridge is quite small.
Yeah, yeah. But I also picked up Chalvo 55, which is a platformer that was never released here, which looks very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up a game called Volleyfire, which is not supposed to be very good, but it was a shooter and the box looks amazing. So I picked that up
again
as well.
With the boxes.
Again with the boxes.
Interesting, the box thing, isn't it? I used to be more into having the boxes than I presently am.
Well, for my European collection, I don't really care because the box price of European stuff is ludicrous because obviously there's so many people collecting over here.
It's certainly gone up, and now I'm at the point where I don't want to pay the extra for the box.
Yeah, but like it's a premium for the box, right? It's usually it used to be like £1 or £2 more for the box, and now it's like 15-20 quid more for the box.
It's a lot more, and I'm not willing to pay, go out of my way.
Nor am I, but
back in the day, I'd say majority of my video game collection is still boxed.
Yeah.
It was only with, I think, when I started collecting Super Nintendo and NES games and the odd Game Boy game here and there, I was like, well, I don't really need the boxes.
Yeah.
And then thought about space, because if you see my game room video, the room I have my games in at home is quite small. I'm lucky enough to have a room for it, but it's quite small, and I can't fit boxes in. As it is, all my N64 game boxes are all inside other boxes and stuff. One day it'd be nice to have them out there and display them, but I mean, that's not possible.
No.
Game boxes.
Ooh, they look nice. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at TMAcast on game boxes.
It's a really exciting subject. Yeah. Game boxes. What do you think? Do you like them?
Well, I'm just thinking,
do you prefer to collect
CIB, or are you a card collector?
Are you bothered about having the manual, or is it just enough to trick people thinking you've already got the manual by having it in a box?
That's true.
I actually keep my manuals separate, so they're easily accessible. Obviously, I say I've got my N64 boxes inside other boxes, so I've got a separate box with all my manuals in. So if
I've got
I
the
need
same for my Super Nintendo, actually.
Yeah.
All my manuals are in the drawer where my Super Nintendo games used to be collected. Yeah. And then the boxes are in a box under my bed.
That's it, yeah. It's great. Cartridge storage is cool. I have my N64 cartridges in the drawer, and so it's just really easy just to open the pull up the drawer and flick through, see what I've got, rather than having the rigmarole of going open the box,
a little
plastic bag.
To be honest, that's why I haven't got many of my Game Boy boxes now, because I just used to not care. It was such an issue to go to the shelf, get it out of the box, put it in.
Well, we're so lazy.
Well, no, like, I obviously...
still those boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Nintendo boxes.
Yeah.
As cool as some of them might be, I much prefer the plastic Mega Drive Master System.
Pull a clamshell open, pull a game out, job
done.
That's
how it should be.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
So, have you been playing much else this week?
Oh, God, I've been playing a lot of games. I picked up some new Game Boy games, a copy of Hook, which I'm currently playing today and is making me want to hurt myself and others. it's not very good, but I thought I'd do a game boil to kind of commemorate the passing of Robin Williams, which is a very sad event, and unfortunately the only game based on one of the films he was in on the Game Boy is Hook.
Which is really? There's no Jack game or...
Nope, no toys.
It's toys. Just on the Super Nintendo, isn't it?
Just on the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Not that toys is a very good game anyway.
I've heard, sadly, isn't.
It is not.
There's got to be a good game based on a Robin Williams film. There's no Mrs. Doubtfire
There's
stealth
no Mrs. Doubtfire
game.
Stealth game. There are other versions of Hook, which I've heard are equally dire as this one. It's just weird. Like, I just completed an ice level, because, you know, that familiar scene where Robin Williams is in the Arctic in Hook fighting penguins and yetis. It's just so padded. It doesn't need to be this long. And, like, there are some fun bits to it. Like, there's one-on-one, like, duels, which is kind of weird, because, like, you're essentially stripping Rupio as you fight him. Like,
okay.
By slashing him, and, like, there's a view of his torso. I don't know if that was a thing during the scene that he kind of, like...
It's been a very long time since I've seen Hook, actually.
Yeah, same.
And I only realised recently that Phil Collins has a cameo in Hook. He plays a police officer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
How about that? Phil Collins and Bob Hoskins in the same film.
Yeah.
It would be easy to confuse them.
It's actually weird you say that, because as soon as you said Phil Collins, I immediately was like, was he Smee? I thought that was Bob Hoskins. No, it's developed by Ocean, who, despite...
Well, I thought Ocean was just a publisher.
No, they also did some of their own programming stuff. But yeah, this is an Ocean game, and it's not a very good one. Which is a shame, because it is a cool film. But then again, I thought to myself, well, how cool would a film based on Hook be? There's a lot of talking and sitting around. Yeah.
Game based. Yeah.
A game based on the film, I should say.
Mm-hmm. And it was made at a certain time.
Yeah, that's true.
Where a lot of these movie games were cookie cutter. But in this one, it seems to have introduced some interesting game mechanics, where you've got to collect things rather than get from one.
Yeah, but that's kind of irritating, because that means you have to backtrack through these maze-like levels trying to find things if you miss them. It's a bit of a pain in the ass.
I prefer it to be a lot more straightforward.
Yeah, so
there were some great games based off movies. A lot of the Disney games, Lion King.
Oh, yeah, like
Aladdin. The list goes on.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked about this many times. But I think generic Hollywood games for this system especially aren't great. Like, I don't think any... Are there any real good games based on Steven Spielberg films? I know Jurassic Park's all right, but Hook's pretty crap. E.T. is obviously notoriously bad.
There's the Jaws game?
There's a Jaws game, which is terrible. Goonies 2 isn't technically based off of it, though. I know there's a Goonies game on the Famicom.
But he didn't direct Goonies.
Anyway, it's Christopher Columbus. Yeah, shit, that's true. What else? What other Steven Spielberg films are there? You're more familiar with the man's work.
Steven Spielberg, Duel, The Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
No, no game for that.
War of the Worlds. No game. I think about that.
I don't
Indiana
know.
Jones. Come on.
Yeah, but is there a specific in? Yeah, there's Last
there
Crusade.
There is
right?
An indie game. There's a few. There's an indie game on the Super Nintendo, which is rather good.
Okay, but there's good Star Wars games. I'm going to write that off to George Lucas being a bit savvy with technology. Any purely Steven Spielberg films?
Let us know.
There are, we'll research it as well, but I don't think there are. But I want to make...
Schindler's List? No, there wasn't a game
No, there wasn't a game based on Schindler's List, believe it or not. Yeah, that. Do you remember that bit in Schindler's List, the game, where you're running around an Arctic killing penguins? Yeah, it was really fun. No, I only bring up Hook because there is a scene in it that I've kept seeing ever since I completed like the third level, that every time I start a level now I get a scene saying you're holding clock.
Yeah.
And it just makes me laugh because, like, I don't know, I assume it's supposed to be Robin Williams, who's kind of got his hands on his hips doing a Saturday Night Fever pose and says you hold clock.
And then what does that mean? What's the clock?
Well, I picked up a clock, and I assume it's going to come into, you know, some kind of battle with Hook. Because obviously there's the bit with the clock and the crocodile and stuff freaking him out, which happens at the end of Hook. But, yeah, it just says, you hold the clock. And now it says, you hold clock sword, because I've got a sword as well. But it's like, this is a game developed by British-speaking publishers. Why is it in such broken English, you hold clock? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, maybe they're just being naughty.
Yeah, maybe. He does look like he's holding his crotch when he's saying it.
So not the most enjoyable gaming experience.
Not the most enjoyable game.
So you've had a terrifying gaming experience in a PT.
Yeah.
This may be equally as terrifying in a different way.
Yeah, I think so. I'll just reel off the other list of Game Boy games I picked up as well, because I'm not going to actually talk about them in depth. I picked up a copy of Looney Tunes by Sunsoft. I picked up Donkey Kong Country for the Game Boy Color. I picked up Spyro, which is a French-only game based on the popular French comic book Spyro. Picked up Litty's Summer Sports, which is a German version of Track Meet. Being a German footballer from the 90s who not even German people knew when I asked. And I also got something else that I'll remember later. But yeah, moving on, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? Well, I got the urge to play a 007 game.
Right.
I'm kind of into my first-person shooters at the moment. It was Halo 4 last week. And this week, I had the urge to be James Bond. So I picked out my copy of 007 Legends.
Yes.
From my gaming wallet. And set about playing that. I'd only ever done the first mission.
Yeah.
But the missions are quite long in 007 Legends. For those who don't know, each level's based off a different Bond film.
Okay.
And they're quite lengthy, split up into several sections. The first one being Goldfinger. The second one, which I did yesterday, was on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes.
Which starts off with a very irritating ski slalom chase.
Yeah.
Thing.
There's a woman on a snow scooter thing. She's been chased by...
Which is a future Mrs. Bond.
Guys on a snow scooter as well, and you're on skis.
Yes, you're on skis.
How does he manage to ski and shoot? I didn't really think about that at the time.
Yeah, well,
because you need kind of both hands for skiing.
He's
kind of required.
It's quite amazing. But what I didn't get, and
is he holding the gun in his teeth?
And what frustrated the hell out of me was I couldn't seem to keep up with the others. You know, I was chasing the Bond girl, and I had to keep up with her, but every time she was getting further and further away from me and his mission over. I must have done this about 4 or 5 times, maybe more. And then suddenly, the next time I played it, I realised the controls flashed up on screen for a split second in the midst of this trying to shoot these guys.
And I did
and
chase not
girl,
see them when I tried
dodge
it.
Dodge these trees at the same time. It don't make it easy for you. And I found there was a button I need to hold down. It was left bumper to accelerate.
Which is not the most intuitive place to press either.
How the controls were introduced to you wasn't very good. And the whole dodging the trees and stuff, and it's difficult.
It's a bit of a pain in the ass. There's no clear path. You just have to kind of mince through the trees, and you just smack into them more times than not, because the controls are very fast, and it's not very fluid.
Yeah.
It's not like you're actually skiing. It's more like the camera is just kind of bombing it towards the end of the path. Yeah.
And this is the overall problem I found with the game as a whole. It tries to shake things up by adding strange gameplay mechanics.
You
or
know why, though,
parts.
Didn't you? It's trying to be Call of Duty. Like, that's its problem. Like, it's trying to have, like, these amazing set pieces and stuff where things slow down and you shoot in. Like...
Yeah, it's doing the Call of Duty thing. It's also doing stuff like introduce hand-to-hand combat in places, which is basically quick time events.
But it was really awkward from what I remember you playing it last time, right?
Well, they're very dull, the fights.
Yeah.
You have to push the sticks in different directions, the left and right sticks, depending on what it tells you on screen, to punch people in the side or in...
Yeah,
the head or whatever. It's dull and it doesn't really add a lot to it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then there's the spying sections where you use all your gadgets, like your camera and your... some of it's quite nice, actually. You have your mobile phone can detect like infrared, kind of, you know, like you can see fingerprints on things. So if you've got a door you need to get through and you don't know the passcode, you put your phone up to the keypad and you can see the fingerprints of the people who've used it last.
Yeah.
And they vary in how use the button is, basically. And that way you can work out the codes and things.
Yeah.
So some of that's quite nice, but it really does break up the flow, but not in the best way. I think I probably would have preferred them to cut back on those parts of the game and focus more on the shooting. But I suppose it's admirable when it works.
Yeah, but
it does help break up
Bond,
the shooting,
though, isn't
a little
it?
Bit. Like, and it makes it feel a little bit more Bond.
Yeah. Like, you need those sequences. I know they don't really work in a video game, and I don't think even GoldenEye really handled, like, the bondiness of, like, having to use the wristwatch to cut things and stuff very well.
They're good in short bursts.
Yeah.
This game relies on them too much and introduces too much of it, I think.
Yeah.
It's a difficult balance to get right. But it's a very functional shooter. It's very enjoyable. You definitely feel like you're James Bond. And what's cool is you get to see these reimaginings of Bond films, which are brought up to date. I was talking to Matt about this earlier, how, if you remember in License to Kill, that you get a lighter from Felix. Felix Leiter, oh, very funny. He gives you a lighter. And in the film, it's got an engraving on it. It's like Best Wishes, whatever. And but in this game, the lighter's got some sort of USB drive in it or something.
Yeah.
So it's trying to make it more modern.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see how they've done that. And on the whole, again, it works well. Yeah, it's a pretty fun shooter. But it's slightly flawed in places.
That's
the problem. But the missions are nice and long. You get, how many Bond films do you get? So we said Goldfinger and Her Majesty's Secret Service. I'm on License to Kill now.
Yeah.
And then you get, unfortunately, Die Another Day after License to Kill.
Ooh.
It's trying to represent all the different Bonds.
Why wouldn't you?
Apart from, oh yeah, Roger Moore, it does in the final mission, which is Moonraker.
Why do you Die Another Day?
Because they've done GoldenEye. Haven't they?
Yeah, I know.
And they did War's Not Enough game back in the day.
Surely they could have done, like, Tomorrow Never Dies. There must be a Tomorrow Never Dies game then.
Yeah, there is.
Oh,
the
God.
The only game I don't think there's been a game of is...
Yeah,
the only film that hasn't been a game
of
is Dying.
Yeah, but it's the worst Bond film. Like,
yep,
I know
by a long shot.
I know you're trying to represent Pierce Brosnan, and I know, obviously, that there is a GoldenEye game, but why didn't you just make... Like, surely whoever owns the right... licensing rights to, like, The World Is Not Enough or Tomorrow Never Dies doesn't care if you make a game, like, just a level based on it. Like, GoldenEye, yeah, I can understand because there's the connotations of GoldenEye now being a very popular game.
And it was only just re-released Eurocom. That was their last project before doing Legend, so they probably didn't want to repeat themselves.
Oh, but surely then they could have done something else.
Yeah, they could have done maybe... I mean, World's Not Enough was also developed by Eurocom back on the N64 PlayStation. They could have done Tomorrow Never Dies because that was the third-person action game and it wasn't so great, if I remember. So that would maybe been preferable to Die Another Day, but who knows? I'll get up to that bit eventually and it could be fun.
Oh,
film's
but
bad, but maybe...
It's not going to be, is it? Because it's an awful film.
We'll see. We'll see.
Oh, boy.
But there we go. 007 Legends. Decided to dig that one out this week.
Cool.
And I continued to play first-person shooters. I dipped back into Perfect Dark, which I downloaded quite some time ago on Xbox Live. And it was interesting playing Perfect Dark after playing a more modern shooter.
Yeah.
That, yes, we were saying... actually, I don't know if we mentioned a podcast, but we played GoldenEye recently. And I know that you weren't so keen on GoldenEye. You felt it aged particularly badly.
Yes.
But it hadn't aged well. I noticed it more playing Perfect Dark after 007 Legends. Even though Perfect Dark was a slightly more refined GoldenEye, it is a bit odd. You have to readjust to playing Perfect Dark. But
I'm just so used to playing like dual stick shooters now, where I've got one gun where I look and one where I aim. And
the thing is, on the Xbox version of Perfect Dark, it is twin stick.
Yeah.
But maybe that doesn't work very. I don't know. It felt a bit odd.
Yeah.
To be honest. That the game wasn't made to be that.
No, of course it wasn't.
It felt a bit off, but what's really striking about it is the clarity of the visuals and the sharpness and the colours are so bright. And
yeah.
It brings back a lot of fun memories of playing Perfect Dark. Whether it's as good as GoldenEye is debatable. Some might say it is. Some say it's a bit of a... It's a mixed bag for me, Perfect Dark. Some bits were a lot of fun. Some bits were a bit
Like the campaign as much as I like GoldenEye, but I preferred the multiplayer.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with you on that.
Yeah.
The multiplayer was better.
Super Dragons and stuff. The fact that you had like
laptop
guns with dual properties and this kind of thing was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss playing that multiplayer. That was fun. Especially as soon as you can play against...
online on Xbox.
You can play against bots as well, which is a very fun feature. Yeah. So
in a way, similar way to Turok Rage Wars. In fact, I think it probably learned a bit off Turok.
Probably did.
With the dual functions on the guns and stuff.
Yeah.
That's Perfect Dark. It's still a good game, and it's still worth playing, I think. It's quite unique. It's got, as with most Rare games, a really fantastic soundtrack as well. Yeah, that was my first-person shooter phase. Apart from that, usual sort of stuff. Back into New Super Mario Bros. Wii U.
Yeah.
Every weekend I seem to play half an hour of that and get to a save point and save for next week.
Playing some particularly nice-looking levels today, though.
There was a really nice one. It's the third to last world, I think. I can't remember how far in it is, but I know how far near the end is. And it's a spooky ghost world, and the backgrounds are like really nice paintings, like impressionist paintings. It looks lovely, and I have to say that the variety in gameplay in this is just really great. You'd think that the new Super Mario Bros. Series would have grown stale with so many releases.
Yeah.
But they really introduced some great new ideas, and there's a really good challenging difficulty level. I noticed after finishing a level, or actually dying on a level, you get those posts from the Miiverse where people say, oh, this is really hard.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're just being a bit pansies, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because, well, it can be hard and frustrating. It's no more hard and frustrating than any retro platformer.
Yeah, well, this is the thing.
And maybe the kids playing these games don't know how hard games used to be.
Yeah, exactly. I actually saw quite a nice meme the other day that I didn't retweet because I hate, like, when you see Twitter accounts that have, like, 80,000 followers, and it's because all they do is post memes with, like, obvious things on.
Yeah.
Like, stupid things like if you remember this, and it's Pokemon. It's like, well, yeah, there's a good chance people are going to remember Pokemon.
Like Pokemon's disappeared and no one talks about Pokemon
exactly.
anymore.
Exactly. But they had one, and it was just like, kids these days will never know how hard it is to complete a game with only 3 lives.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, yeah, that's true.
You can agree with that.
Yeah.
True. And in one sitting as well. But I don't mind that. I don't mind being able to play it in several chunks, especially since games have got a lot longer, and which is great, isn't it? I guess in a way, because it's more value for money, but at the same time, you want to finish it. You know, if you're more of a casual player than myself, you actually want to be able to get to the end to it. I think Nintendo are quite good at length.
Yeah, I think so too.
Games and value and getting the most out of something. Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Every week, pretty much. We had Austin over the other day and played a bit more of that. It's great fun online, as always, playing with people from different countries. Never gets old. Yeah. Can't say much more than I haven't already said, like, every week about Mario Kart. Interesting to note that I saw an article online recently that some guys have managed to hack into Mario Kart and they can do crazy things with it now. And apparently it took 12 weeks to get through the Wii U architecture and security. It's interesting because they can say things like the Wii U is more secure than the Wii was.
Yeah.
And they also make comments about, we don't want to ruin this game for people. That they may have hacked into the game, they could do things online, they could quite easily go on and cheat online.
Yeah.
But it was more like they wanted to prove that they could do it rather than hack and then take advantage of And ruin, basically, a really solid multiplayer game for other people.
But, of course, I would argue that in them going like, yeah, we did this, we don't want to wreck it for anyone, they've kind of proven to people who would that it is possible.
Yeah, and you might get other people.
Yeah, who will now take advantage of that.
Because apparently, I didn't know this, but Mario Kart Wii got wrecked by hackers eventually, and people really took advantage of what they could do in the game to cheat. Spoil
which
the fun
doesn't
everyone
make
else.
Any sense to me, but there we go.
It doesn't. That's what Mario Kart's about. It's about skill.
That's about having a dick around. Like, why would you want to like win every race automatically? It makes no sense to me. Like, I don't get people who cheat at games.
Neither do I. Injustice was another game that played again with Austin this week. It's I hadn't played it for a while. It's really good.
Actually. Yeah, it's fun.
It's very fast.
Quite surprised you haven't got the one for the Wii U yet.
I have.
Have you?
I've got Injustice on the Wii U.
Really?
That's what we were playing.
What, the spangly new one, or...?
Not the spangly new deluxe version, no.
Yeah,
I've got the original Injustice. I haven't felt inclined to get the one with the extra characters.
I'd imagine it's probably like a fiver, you may as well.
Yeah, I've seen it on offer on the other formats. If I was to get it, I'd probably get it for another format.
Yeah,
when
of course.
When I see it dirt cheap somewhere. It's got some new characters, like Lobo in it. I recently read a comic with Lobo and really enjoyed it. So maybe I'll get that. But it's a damn fine game. And it makes me excited to see what NetherRealm will do with the new Mortal Kombat. They did a great job with the last one. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool good. Again. And that's pretty much everything I've played this week.
Oh! Ooh.
Apart from Monday night.
Yes.
When we had a game party, a retro party.
Yes,
we
did.
That was a lot of fun.
We did indeed.
We played a lot of games that evening. I don't know if you mentioned it last week, but we had several TVs set up. We had three TVs. The main big TV was playing GameCube games mostly.
Yeah,
F-Zero.
Mainly. We did kind of set it up for PS2 as well, but then that never materialized. I think it was just people playing GameCube.
Mario Kart, Double Dash, Smash Bros.
WarioWare.
WarioWare. And then we had the other TV in the living room playing Nintendo consoles. Mostly Super Nintendo, wasn't it? And a bit of N64 later.
A bit of NES as well when I first started. Yeah, I was playing Bubble Bobble with my girlfriend saying, like, this is my favourite game of all time. This is what I used to play when I was a kid. And she's like, what's the point of it, though? And I was like, well, you trap things in bubbles and you break them and then you move on to the next level. And she's like, right, okay.
There is quite an obvious point to
Bubble
Bobble.
Yeah, but, like, she, you know, her fond memories of the NES are games like Mega Man, and games like Willow, she was telling me. She's a big fan of the Willow game, which is an action RPG. And I was just kind of like, wow, I tried to give you Dragon Quest and you had none of it. But yeah, she was like, yeah, I really like Willow. So for her, I think gaming is more an experience of moving through something rather than like an arcade experience. So
yeah, it's a different thing for different people, isn't it? You played Zombies, was it?
Played Zombies at my neighbor's. Yeah. I played some Turtles in Time.
Whipped out a bit of Mario Brothers All-Stars.
Yeah, I did. Our friend Lewis.
You wanted to have a nostalgia trip.
Wanted a nostalgia trip with some old school Mario. You were playing some Micro Machines.
Micro Machines was a big hit on the Mega Drive with the J-Cart 4-way adapter.
Yeah.
And what else did we play on Mega Drive? Oh,
Paul was sampling Pitfall,
which is
a game.
Asterix.
Yeah, he bought Pitfall a very long time ago, and then never bought a Mega Drive, so he gave his copy of Pitfall to me. So we finally played it, and he didn't really enjoy it.
No, very nicely animated sprites.
Yeah, it looked very cool.
It looked nice. And what else do you play? Captain America and the Avengers.
Which I force people to play, and no one seems to get. No one seems to get why I love that game, and it's awesome.
It's all right.
It's fun.
Some Micro Machines. That really had them going, that did.
It did. There was a lot of Micro Machines play.
And the Dreamcast and the Saturn also got played on.
They did, indeed.
Sexy Parodius.
Yeah.
Was a bit of a hit on the Saturn.
Also played a bit of Waku Waku 7 on the Saturn as well, closing off the night.
And perhaps actually the biggest draw in terms of fighting games that evening was
Power Stone
on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, which a lot of people seem to love.
Yeah, happy to be able to introduce Power Stone to a few people, and that got a lot of play. So maybe Capcom, new Power Stone or something. That'd
be nice.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know how well the PSP re-release Power Stone 1 and 2 went, but maybe if you re-release it on a console which is more multiplayer based.
And people have.
Yeah. I think it's a weird choice to release it on PSP.
Yeah, well, it's
why not an arcade title, downloadable?
Big in Japan. Like, obviously, a lot of people had PSP for thingamajiggy.
I guess they play
Monster Hunter and stuff.
On the train or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, a lot of people used to play Monster Hunter together, so I probably thought, well, Japan, this will be the system releasing on, so people can play
it. But it's a small screen.
Yeah.
There's a lot, especially in Power Stone 2, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see. In fact, back in the day, I used to think it'd be great if we had a Jackie Chan game made with the Power Stone engine.
Yeah.
And you'd have a selection of characters from different films, and you'd have different locations from different films, and it would be a really nostalgic kind of tribute to the legacy of Jackie Chan and his films.
You were the only person who would buy it, though. I had to break it to you.
Oh, come on, Jackie's popular the world over. I think people would buy that.
If it was on the Super Nintendo.
I wonder how well Jackie Chan's Stuntmaster did on the PS1.
Probably not very well.
It wasn't bad.
I don't know. I haven't played it. I can't comment.
It's alright there. I kind of like a side-scrolling beat 'em up, but 3D. Like, yeah. You can do a few tricks and fancy things.
Fair. I've been playing some PS4 for the first time in a very long time.
Well, yes, you were playing.
I played a variety of indie games. After that, I played a bit of Hohokam, which has finally been released. Mm-hmm. The game where you play as a lion going around the world and doing mystical puzzle things. First of all, I put
That's a great description.
Yeah,
you're flying going on world.
Well, it is true. Like you're a very colourful lion, and you kind of go around solving puzzles.
A big snake.
Yeah, I guess kind of a big snake. Imagine Snake the game for the Nokia mobile phone, but in a very vibrant, colourful world.
And you have more freedom, obviously.
Yeah, and you can actually touch your tail without dying at the end of the game.
Don't have to eat apples.
Well, pixels, whatever they were. But it's good. I can't. It's a very unique game. It's kind of very hard to describe. It's got a beautiful visual aesthetic. It's very vector-based, and it kind of inspired me to maybe do some graphics in the week because I really liked the look of the game. Mm. It was almost a love letter to a good friend of ours, Matteo, because it seems right up his street, and I texted him and said, have you been making a game called Hohokam in your spare time? Because it's just amazing. It looks really cool.
This is the main selling point of the game, isn't it? That it looks really nice.
Yeah, I mean, like, in terms of its gameplay, yeah, it's fun. I remember people saying after, like, you know, E3 and stuff, like last year when they first showed this game, like, oh my God, this is the best game. I don't think it is. Like, I don't think it... I think it's going to win a lot of awards purely based on how different it is in its visual style, but I don't think it's one of the best games I've played by a long shot. Like, even recently, like, something like Tearaway just stomps all over that kind of game. And I know, obviously, it's got a different kind of budget, but I mean, even other marketplace games like Don't Starve.
Yeah, it's quite light it's like on gameplay, isn't it? It's more of a journey-like experience. I get the feeling.
It is, and probably as rich in visuals, I would say, as Journey, but perhaps not so much
way,
in depth.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, I don't think people playing Journey and having that experience of cooperating with other people and stuff will have the same experience as those playing Hohokam. But it's a good game. It's only 79 krona, so it's about £7 with PS Plus at the moment. So I'd say get it if you think you might be into it, but I don't think it's going to be for everyone. I think the lack of a story and ambiguity to the game is going to infuriate some people.
I don't think it's a classic, but it's nice to see a game like that appearing on the PS4.
Agreed. And it's also on the Vita, it's a cross-buy.
Yeah, it has very nice music as well. If you want a relaxing Sunday afternoon, then Hohokam, you could do far worse, I think.
Exactly. And then I played a little bit of... What is it called?
Rogue Legacy?
No, before Rogue Legacy.
Giving the game away.
Path... Road.
I didn't
best
see.
Best taken.
Oh, Road Not Taken.
Road Not Taken. Thank you very much.
We mentioned in the podcast for the last 2 weeks.
We have, it was free on the PSN this month, so I got it.
That didn't grab you then?
Not really. Very nice visual aesthetic. Again, almost like our friend Toby drew it. It looks very nice to look at. I was more intrigued by the cutscenes between the gameplay than I was the actual gameplay. Everything's a bit too chubby for my liking. Everything feels a bit like it was made by one person in a room on Flash, whereas a lot of games you see these days are made by very small teams, but they look very refined. This one didn't really grab me other than the animation side of it, and it looks nice. But essentially all you're really doing is you're walking around a square grid and you're lifting things up and putting them in other places. It seems like it's a game that's more style over substance to me, and that's a bit of a shame. Like, it feels like a Game Boy game, but it doesn't have the charm to kind of pull off this minimal aesthetic. Essentially, what you're doing is you're this wandering dude who kind of looks like a bit like Orko from He-Man. Meets Vivi from Final Fantasy IX. You're that kind of black mage, glowing eyes in a red hood.
Yeah,
and you essentially you're some kind of mage and you have to save children from a forest by moving things around kind of in a boxel style fashion, in that you can pick up things with the X button and then you can put them down with circle and throw them, and you have to like match pairs of objects and stuff. It didn't really do anything for
me. Is it kind of like, sounds to me like it could be more of an Xbox Live indie type.
Yes, yeah. Feels that way yeah. too. Feels. But
is that reflecting the price of the game, or is it still? It's free, isn't it?
It's free at the moment, but it's £10.
Probably.
Like,
yeah, it's probably going to cost.
I don't think it's worth the price, to be honest with you. Unlike something like I played afterwards, like Rogue Legacy, which I thought was a fantastic game. It's almost as if you took Spelunky and Castlevania Symphony you liked, and you threw them in a blender, and you poured it out in there, and said, here you go, Matthew, have some of that. And I was like, that's a tasty game.
Yeah. With a nice comedy element
oh,
to it.
God
comedic.
Damn. Oh. That's really fun. Essentially, the game starts off with you as a knight, and it kind of takes you through the tutorial of, it's pretty straightforward, like, X is jump, circle is your special attack. If you press down and square, I think it is, you hit platforms and stuff. And X is jump, square is hit, circle is your special move, and triangle then is, once you've upgraded your classes, it's an extra special move. For example, if you're a paladin class, you can block with triangle and stuff. But essentially, you do this, and you hit a king, and then it turns out that this king's mortally wounded, and so this family have gone into this castle to try and get this thing to save the king. And so every time you enter the castle with a knight, you try and get through as much of the castle as you can, you die. So you save the gold and you take the XP. And after you die, you get to play as one of your heirs. And when you look at these, they can either be a different class, a different gender. Mm-hmm. They will also have different character traits, like there's dwarfism, which makes you really short. There's gigantism, which makes you like four times the size of the screen, which is really awkward to play as. Some of the characters are colorblind, so everything's in black and white. There was one character I played, he's just like, one of his character traits was nostalgia. Loves things like the good old days, and everything had that cheesy kind of grain filter from... Yeah, the sepia tones from Windows Movie Maker over everything. And there's loads like short-sighted, can't see in front of you. And then there's just status things that don't matter for anything. It's just like, likes to exaggerate, like a lot in capitals. And then it's just like, gay. And it's just like, then some classes attracted to men or attracted to women, depending on which you are. I think this game really handles gender well. And in the fact that you play as a man or a woman, and there are visual differences, like you can have very long hair, or you can have bows, and like you can have beards. Even some of the women sometimes have like a moustache, which I found quite hilarious. But that then means that the class you're playing now, because everything's randomly generated, you're picking the person best for the job, rather than like, I want to go bloke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no, like, oh, well, I'm going the lady because it's different to go the lady. You pick the character that's best for the job. And I think this is probably the best representation.
And it's better to play as a girl.
Of gender roles, this kind of thing, in a game. Because there's
Or a guy. Depending on who you are.
gender in general. Like, you playing as a man or woman doesn't really matter. It's just the best person for the job. And I really like that aspect. It's pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, other games I played, I poured a good 3 or 4 hours into that game.
So was that, Matthew, was that the game of the week for you?
God damn it, Rogue Legacy was definitely the game of the week for me.
Game of the week for Matt.
Nice jingle.
So yeah, it's a big recommendation there. If it out. If you're a PS4, PS3, PS Vita.
Cross-buy. It's been on Steam for ages, and it's both on Mac, Linux, and PC. I wanted to buy it for Mac, but I wanted to wait because I knew it was coming to the PS4. But it's a damn good game. I really recommend it.
Fine on the controller, I imagine.
Yeah, this is why I wanted to wait. I don't like playing games on mouse and keyboard, and I haven't got anything to plug into my Mac controller wise.
Okay. And I think out of everything I've played this week, I'd like to recommend Kid Dracula on the Famicom.
Yeah.
That's my pick of the games this week.
Tom's Game of the
Week. But if you like platform games and you don't have a Famicom, then play New Super Mario Bros. Wii U. You could do far worse if you have a Wii U.
Or get Kid Dracula on the Game Boy, despite its ridiculous prices. Very rare game, Tom. I also went to some flea markets this weekend.
Yes, let's talk about the games we picked up and bought this last week.
Yes.
And I know you had some.
I had some crazy deals.
You did.
Crazy deals.
Danish Steal of the Week.
Danish steal of the week.
We'll get to that. Tell us what you got.
Right. So I went to a flea market. A good friend of mine, a guy called Niels, who I work with, mentioned to me, he said, like, hey, there's this big flea market in my hometown. And I was like, oh, great. And as I do when I go to flea markets, is on Fyn, which is the middle island in Denmark. I looked and I said, well, are there any on the way? And there was one or two in a town called Kolding, and I didn't want to go to those because every time I go there, there's nothing there generally. Mm. And there's a lot of people like buying every game they see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, right, okay, well, there's this little one off in a town called Middelfart. Yes, that's right. There is a place in Denmark called Middelfart.
Oh, that's all giggle.
Giggle. Yeah. We have much amusement at Middelfart. Every time we used to pass it on the train on the way to Copenhagen, we're like, oh, Middelfart. But we've lived here 3 years now. We're kind of over it. So I went to Middelfart and let off a small toot and got out of the car. And there was a flea market there. And surprisingly, it seemed to be more aimed at like being a kid's flea market. Like, it was a million.
Flea Market Junior.
There was a lot of toys. It was mainly focused around toys. Like, every stall I went on to had a gazillion toys. Like, there was other stores as well selling like glass and stuff, but more toys than I've ever seen in a flea market in Denmark. There was lots of turtle stuff. There were some Transformers. There was millions of Batman figures. And I was just going through this, kind of going like, wow, this is all really cool stuff. I got myself a Dragon Zord from Power Rangers for 20 krona, which is amazing. So he sat over there by my editing desk.
Yeah, in all, I remember that. And
in
I wasn't
all
big
his
into Power Rangers.
Shiny gold and green, grey and black glory. I got a bootleg G1 Transformer because I've never seen a bootleg G1 Transformer, which is pretty interesting. And then as I was going through, I was like, oh God, I really can't see anything. I was just like, have they got any video games? Is it more specifically like a toy market? Was I too late because we arrived like an hour after it started? Have I missed everything? And as I walked on, I happened to see a table that had games on. And it's just like, I could see this bag of games, and all I could really see was a Game Boy Advance cartridge in this little bag. And I, a little transparent, like, you know, just a carrier bag. I guess it was for like cables or something, but then they put these games in.
Yeah.
And I picked it up, and there were some DS games in there as well. I turned it over, and I could see that both Boktai and Metroid Fusion were in there. And I was like, I'm having me some of that. I don't care about the DS games really, but I want those two games. And I said, how much are these? And the woman behind the counter goes, 20 krona. And I was like, right, okay. I went, 20 krona each? And she goes, no. 20 krona. And I looked at the bag of games.
Because there was the option, you know, the opening for a say. Oh, yeah. Each.
Yeah, each. Rather. No, she goes, no, 20 krona. And I looked at the bag, like I said, and in total, there was like 5 or 6 Game Boy Advance games in there and a handful of DS games. Mm. I was like, I'm having that. So I pulled out 20 krona. I was like, thanks. I went to walk away. And then I realized after I'd done that, then I picked up the games and I realized, oh shit, the games are resting on bags. I said, those Game Boys. And she goes, yeah. And so I picked up in the first bag and it was a DSi and a AGS 101 SP, the pink ones, in this thing. And it had like Super Princess Peach, New Super Mario Brothers. There were one or two Game Boy Advance games like A Little Mermaid and some Danish game that I'd never heard of, as well as one or two other DS games as well. And I was like, okay. I was just going to have the SP because I didn't really want the DSi. DS Lite. And I was like, I said, how much for it? She goes, 50 krona. And I was just like, I said, for both? She goes, yeah, the bag. And so I took that. And as I picked that up, she goes, oh, there's a black one here too. So I opened the second bag, which contained not only a black DS Lite, and a blue Game Boy Advance SP.
Yeah.
But pretty much had most of the Pokemon games in it. It had Pokemon Crystal, Pokemon Emerald, Pokemon Ruby, Pokemon Pearl, Pokemon Diamond, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, and there was like a FIFA game in there.
Pokemon Red, Fire Red?
Or? No, unfortunately, I still haven't run across a copy of Fire Red or Leaf Green. Like, it seemed to be eluding me while I'm here. And so I was like, give you 100. She goes, yeah. Gave her 100. 4 consoles. A ton of games.
Yeah. And good games at that.
And Nintendo games. And when I got home and I emptied out the little bag, it was all Nintendo titles. It was like another copy of New Super Mario Brothers, a copy of Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, a copy of Mario Kart, a copy of Mario Party. Just
Mario 64.
Mario 64 was in there. Super Mario 64 on the DS.
Yeah.
Sonic and Mario the Olympics. A flash card with a 2 gigabyte stick. So I now have a flash card for my DSi. I'm going to pop some SNES emulators on there and go to town. It was awesome. It was a really good deal. And so I was like, great, chuffed with that.
It can't get any better, can it?
Well, it didn't really, in all fairness. Those were probably the highlights. Walked down the road then a bit further down, bought a Batmobile for my friend Paul, as well as a Batman figure and an Egon from Real Ghostbusters. And then I hit another stall and it had an SP and some Game Boy games. I said, how much of the Game Boy games? And most of them I already had, but they had a copy of Looney Tunes and Donkey Kong that I previously mentioned. I got those 15 kroner each. So I walk back then and we go to this other big flea market. And I ran into the stall of the first real Danish reseller I've ever seen. And it was ludicrous. Like, he had prices on, like, Game & Watch Gallery for the Game Boy was 100 kroner, so like 11 quid for a cart. Double Dragon 2 on the Game Boy was like nearly 20 quid. It was just ludicrous prices for just playing carts. He had a copy of Blues Brothers, PAL-B exclusive for the NES, which is a rare game. Admittedly, I know it is a rare game. It's only available in PAL-B. But he wanted £167 for it. He wanted 1,550 kroner, which is mental. Like, does he really think that there's someone walking
especially
around a flea
market?
Especially
in that environment, yeah.
Yeah. I was so pissed off by this. And then I went to the tent next door and there was a few SNES games. And I was like, oh, that's good. Well, he hasn't gone round the market and cleared everything up. And I bought F-Zero and I was chatting to the guy because he was like, oh, well, these are just some duplicates I got kind of thing while going on flea markets, so I'm selling them off. Seemed like a nice guy. And he said, like, the guy in the tent next door could be chatting about the prices and stuff. He goes around every year, he said. He said, I wouldn't bother walking around, I said, because he's probably been round because they set up on a Thursday and then they open Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But this guy, he said, he goes around on the Thursday as everyone's setting up and buys everyone's games. And I could see him marking up games when I was in there, which the games I'd missed. Fortunately, nothing I needed. But I was a bit pissed off by that. I was like, well, I'm going to have a look around just in case. So I bought this copy of F-Zero because this guy had a few games, like I said, and he'd refused to sell them. He said, like, every year I've come here, he said, like, I sold him my N64 collection and stuff. And he goes, I've made more money off him than he's made off me. Like, I've made the money I've wanted. And he goes, this year I offered him these games because he had, like, Super Mario World, he had Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island, F-Zero, and a few other bits and bobs. I can't really remember, nothing noteworthy. But he said I offered them to him at eBay prices, like which is what he's selling them at. And he said he didn't want to buy them.
Yeah.
So, and from the looks of things, he wasn't selling anything. There was no one in his tent. Like, everyone I saw went in there, picked things up really excited, looked at the price and put it back down.
Yeah.
So I don't get what the fucking logic is. But apparently this guy goes there every year, so I'm not going to bother going there next year.
Anything.
No. So, along I went and I looked around and I found a copy of Street Fighter EX plus Alpha, the 3D Street Fighter game for 10 kroner, which is all right. And then I was walking around. There's a bit in these markets usually where they sell animals. So there was like fluffy bunnies and I'm a sucker for a fluffy bunny. And so I was going to my girlfriend in the way the four-year-old might, bunnies, bunnies, bunnies. And I stopped to look at the bunnies. And out of the corner of my eye, I see a Wii on the table and I see the word super. And my eye just shoots up and I look and I go in. And bear in mind, the woman had seen me go like, bunnies, as if I was a simpleton. And had kind of laughed at my reaction to the rabbit. And then I kind of like mid-turn, just like turned into like, I'm serious. And then went up and then looked and there was a copy of Super Soccer boxed for the Super Nintendo, as well as turns out later, a German copy of Star Wing and a copy of NBA Live
96.
Which is a game I'm not that familiar with.
But fine year.
A fine year for NBA titles, I'm sure. Well, FIFA 96 was good, so I imagine it's all right. So I said, like, how much are these? She goes, oh, well, they're 50 each. I said, well, you do the 3 for 125. I said, she goes, yeah, sure. I said 100 first, and then she went 140. I was like, 125. And I was like, yeah,
nice.
Good.
Haggling.
So I got those 3. Just because I never see Super Nintendo stuff. I was very fortunate to see F-Zero, which I played to death yesterday after getting it, and I love that game so much. And I haven't played it in about 15 years because my cousin owned it and we never did.
Yeah.
And so it was fun to play that again. But that's pretty much it, I think. I don't think I got anything else. But some ludicrous bargains and then some nice Super Nintendo games to add to the collection. So it was nice.
Well done.
Ooh, yeah.
These flea market pickups get better and better.
They do. Unfortunately, it's coming to the end of flea market season. There's only 2 weeks left, really. I'm off to Hungary at the end of August as well, so hopefully I'll get some stuff from there. But, yeah, I think that's pretty much coming to a close. There'll be maybe one or two next weekend, and then the weekend after I'm in Hungary, so there won't be any. So last week is my last week of flea market pickups for the year, which is a bit of a shame. But I've got
the good ones.
I got a lot of games to sit back on. I've got a lot of Game Boy games I'm playing, so it's all good and hood.
I haven't bought any physical copies of games this last week, but the PlayStation Summer Sale Part 2 is now on. And I picked up Fluff Rousers because you spoke very highly of that.
It's a damn good game.
And I've yet to really sink my teeth into it, but that was on offer and very affordable price, along with Steambot Dig.
Which is also a very good game.
Yeah, and so on your recommendation, Matthew, I picked both of them up for my Vita.
Good times. God damn, we haven't played Spelunky in ages. I need to play some Spelunky. I was just thinking of Luftrausers. Yeah, yeah. Like, I haven't played Luftrausers in ages. I need to play that. But yeah, I also need to play Spelunky.
Also, I'm tempted by Striders on offer.
Yeah.
So maybe I might pick that up. I've got no room on my PS3 at the minute. So
no, okay, fair enough.
It was pretty good, but I don't know if I'm that inclined.
Yeah, I wouldn't bother. I honestly, like, I thought it was all right, and I didn't read about it. Right, let's quickly talk about Gamescom stuff. The big two stories for me, at least, because we're running very long on this podcast at the moment. We're at an hour and 10, Tom.
Oh, my God.
I know, a lot to talk about. But, so, highlight of the Xbox conference for a lot of people was Microsoft going, like, yeah, and the new Tomb Raider game's exclusive.
Yeah.
And the internet went mental. And then, like, a day later, they were forced to say,
at
we've got Tomb Raider exclusive for a limited time.
Of course.
Yeah, which is bound to happen, but, yeah, like...
It's always for a limited time.
Yeah, but,
anything.
Like... Yeah, but they announced it as an exclusive. Like, they buried the lead. They didn't say, like... And it's a timed exclusive. Because they said, like, with their Call of Duty stuff, they were like, yeah, we're getting exclusive content before the PS4 and stuff. Yeah. And then that led them, everyone on the internet, to think that it was not a timed exclusive, that they actually bought the rights. Which was never going to happen. Because in this day and age, you can't afford to have a big game like that. Especially not Square. Like, can you imagine Square backing the losing horse at this point in time? Like, they're not really selling that many games. Like, their profits last year were down because they had ludicrous expectations for the first Tomb Raider game. And, like, I can't imagine them putting the time and effort into developing it only to then sell it to Xbox.
You want to sell,
especially after,
the
like, Titanfall.
Audiences possible.
So, I mean, let's be honest, it's not a game that's going to sell systems. Unless it looks absolutely incredible, everyone's just going to wait for their console if they don't own an Xbox One, or they're just going to play it on their Xbox One.
It's going to get released on the last generation as well.
It is.
Meaning it might not be as visually splendid as it could be.
No, and I don't think it will.
It will look fantastic, I'm sure, because even the last one on the last gen hardware amazes me to this day how good it looks.
But that amazes me that Microsoft are going to support the Xbox 360 into 2015. Because this is a fall, winter 2015 release.
Yeah. There's still a huge user base, so...
It's almost as if no one's buying next-gen consoles because there's nothing to play on them. Funny that, eh?
Or they just release the stuff that's on the new gen, on the last gen, so...
Yeah.
You're not forced to upgrade.
I also saw a Twitter comment that I can't remember who posted it, but it said HD is the new HD. I was just like, that's fucking true.
I mean, if you do compare a lot of these games, of course, they look marginally better on the new hardware, but I think it's mostly, for me at least, lighting seems to be very nice on the new stuff, and everything else is kind of similar. Yeah. Apart from games like PT, which looks fantastic.
Yeah. Highlights of the PS4 conference, which is announced to me by very excited people on Twitter. Tearaway Unwrapped is coming to the PS4. And there was a tweet today that said that 50% of the content is going to be new and non-in the 50. Vita version. Well, there's a lot of stuff they could obviously bring over, like but a lot of it, obviously, they can. Like, I'm actually wondering if they're going to use the PlayStation camera. Because
I think
that
so.
Was some of the most fun bits of that
when
game.
When you can see yourself in it.
Yeah, seeing me as the sun, but also, you know, taking pictures of, like, my jeans and then putting them on that moose. So there was denim mooses around. Oh, God, that's a fun bit of the game. There's loads of bits where you get to take pictures of stuff and then, like, give things new textures.
I think they've got to integrate the camera.
God damn, you got to play that game, Tom. You got to play more of it. It's
but
awesome.
What's interesting to see is how they've taken the control scheme of the PS4 and they're trying to get the most out of the PS4 controller.
Oh, God, that moment where they, like, sucked the squirrel up like a vacuum cleaner with the controller and shot him. I was like, oh, my God, that's
which
amazing.
Is not too dissimilar from the playground stuff.
Yeah, but they make it playroom. Work. Yeah. Like, you can suck up the things, you can shoot them out, but, like, they make it work in a gameplay perspective, not just like, hey, this is a tech demo, what we could do. Like,
it's nice, because it's got to be substantially different than the Vita one if it's using the controller how it is.
Of course it does.
Do
I mean,
some things like put your finger through the back of it.
Which is a shame, because that was a very big part of it to make you like bounce and stuff. Yeah. I don't get how they're going to do that. I guess they can do it from the front, but then that's not going to have the same appeal, is it, if you're using the touchpad in the front?
No, you have to work with what they've got, I suppose. But that's one to look out for certain, and hopefully it will expose a whole other audience to the delights of Tearaway.
To what is one of my favourite games of all time. Yeah. It is that good. It is mind-blowing.
It's one of the most innovative portable games.
It is just a tech demo for the Vita, and once you play that game, you will love the Vita, and you will see the possibilities of the Vita. Unfortunately, there's not the user base there to make...
Yeah.
Use of them.
Again, a damn fine console from Sony, like the original PSP was.
Yeah.
Which hasn't quite got the audience it should have, really.
Yeah. And I know this might sound like Sony bias after us going like, oh, well, Xbox said this about the exclusive thing. Honestly, if Xbox One had a game like Tearaway, had a game of that quality that was only available on that system, I would go and
there's
buy one.
An awful lot more to talk about in terms of what Sony... what game Sony are getting at the moment, like Cohokum, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked about them on this podcast. I don't know how much... I mean, yes, they've got some killer apps waiting in the wings for Xbox One.
Oh, damn right
that's
they
true.
Have.
Including Cuphead, which is still there, and they show more of that at Gamescom. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking forward to what they're going to show at EGX this year. The Eurogamer Expo.
So,
I can't wait to get hands on with some of these games. It's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to playing Assassin's Creed Unity if it's on display, but also the Assassin's Creed game for the previous generations, which you play as a Templar. Do you not know
the
this?
The Rogue one.
I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
Assassin's Creed Rogue.
Perhaps. Yes, I think so. I think you're right. But that looks interesting concept to play as a Templar rather than a assassin. I don't think that's going to appeal to people who are not a fan of the series, but for those who are,
interesting, they're getting a different version. No, they're getting both, aren't they?
No, they're not.
They're not getting
Unity is made for the Xbox One and the PS4.
Sorry, I thought that was on all of them.
No,
Rogue. So this is a totally different game.
Rogue is a different game.
Wow. Hopefully, they Rogue put as game. Much time into
Rogue is a game using Assassin's Creed's 4 engine. Unity is using its own new engine.
Right. Okay. I'm starting to think, though, they've made so many of these games now. When's it going to lose
traction?
Momentum?
Yeah. I'm kind of bored of it. Like, the fourth one was very good. It stars a Welsh pirate from Swansea, which is right up my alley.
Yeah, and you liked three, didn't you? You got into three.
I got into three at the end, yeah. Apparently, this game's going to be set during the time of three, which is making me a bit dubious because I'm like, well, why are you going back to three? So I guess Unity's going to follow on from four. I don't know.
And where's this...
But then again, I guess after that questionnaire they send out,
the
going, like, hey,
game.
Do you want more pirate games?
Yeah.
Like Black Flag's going to go its own route, maybe, and that's why they're not making another
where's
Black Flag game.
Pirate game?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Waiting in the wings.
In terms of games coming up soon, I usually talk about new releases at the end of the podcast.
New releases?
There's not a lot that we hadn't already mentioned in the last 2 weeks' episodes. We were pretty desperate for new releases in the last couple of weeks.
No
so
releases.
We listed everything that was coming out in August.
Oh, God damn, Destiny's out in like 3 weeks.
It's Destiny,
hot
it's the big one.
Damn.
There's some more games coming out in September. We'll talk about them next week, though.
I say this, I'm just like, oh, my God, Destiny. Probably not going to play it. Done too.
But you enjoyed that.
I'll probably play it on Tuesdays. Hopefully it'll take over Battlefield so I never have to play that game again.
Even I think get Jakob to
get it. Well, I can get Fred and a few other people at the office to play it as well. So
I think that'll be great replacement.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to do Halo and you can also play with us on Tuesdays so I won't hog the TV. And we can both play Destiny on a Tuesday.
Oh, it would be two player.
I
on one console.
Why not? Like Halo was. It's Bungie. Mm. They're kind of good with the whole local multiplayer thing. We'll see. Yeah. Right, guys, until next week, please have a look at us on iTunes. Share this podcast with other people you think may like it. Give it a cheeky rate and a subscribe. You can find us on Twitter at TMAcast. You can find us on Facebook and like us at facebook.com/TomandMattAttack. One quick shout out, I would download this week's Retro Asylum podcast because an interview with John fucking Romero of Doom fame and Quake. Go have a look, or listen, as it were. It's a good stuff. It's quite a cool podcast. Have a look. And, yeah, and then you can find us on Stitcher as well as iTunes. Until next week, guys. It's good night from me. Good night from him. Game on.
Oh, it's a bit premature there.
It was. Right, one, two, three. Game on.